statement and give the floor to Nick.
And 21C. Nick?
Great. So, yeah, we'll continue the discussion of the paper 21C. 21C builds on the board's previous discussions on improving the guidance supporting aggregation and disaggregation. Those discussions resulted in tentative decisions to provide principles, supporting definitions, and guidance on the steps involved in aggregation and disaggregation. The board also directed staff to continue working on these proposals and explore whether principles-based guidance could be developed to encourage further disaggregation of large residual or other balances. This paper is divided into three sections. The first further develops the staff proposals for improving aggregation and disaggregation. The second explores specific guidance on aggregation of immaterial items, which might result in large residual or other balances. And the final section summarizes the tentative decisions on the project, which are expected to result in improved guidance on aggregation and disaggregation. So the first question for the board is on page 8 and relates to further guidance on aggregation and disaggregation, building off the previously tentative decided principles and definitions. The paper focuses on the process of financial statement preparation as it relates to aggregation and disaggregation. It clarifies the levels of aggregation and disaggregation expected in financial statements, acknowledges the judgments required and the importance of materiality, explains how characteristics might be used in aggregation and disaggregation, and distinguishes between presentation of primary financial statements versus disclosure in the notes. So the question for the board is, does the board agree with the staff's recommendations to replace the guidance tentatively decided by the board on the steps involved in financial statement preparation with a description of aggregation and disaggregation included in paragraph 15 of this paper and the supporting guidance along the lines of those discussed in paragraphs 11 to 20?
Anne.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks for the recap. In relation to question one, I support the idea that paragraphs 11 through 16 explain the process, and I think that's an improvement on what we had before. My suggestion is, though, that what we've got in question one could easily be like a guidance statement, like a paragraph, that could then fit back in with what we've got in the appendix. So in the appendix, we've got principles and we've got definitions. And then we used to have in A4 a statement of guidance. And I wasn't sure if that's how you see that working, that this, what's in question one, becomes a statement of guidance that slots back in as the third paragraph. And then the paragraphs 11 through 16 become the supporting material. Because I think that it's beneficial to have a paragraph which is the statement of the guidance and then the additional paragraphs to support that. I think that's a better way of presenting it. And I just wasn't sure from the way it was framed whether that's how you plan to do it or whether 11 to 16 just becomes the guidance.
Yes, I think the intention, and it may just be in the wording of how the question has been written, is that, yes, those three paragraphs that sort of summarize the steps would replace the three paragraphs that exist now as, mm-hmm. as those steps. And we think that what was incorporated and what we had before is really included already within the principles or embedded in this guidance we've mm-hmm. put. And then because these are quite brief, then that those paragraphs would support these three. Mm-hmm. And so it would work as you suggested.
So I would tweak the wording a little bit in question one to make it into a guidance statement that fits with the other two paragraphs, rather than, as it is now, it's a description of process. And a description of process is something different from a guidance statement. So that was one thing. The other thing I had was to do with the use of the word items, line items. In the question one, we've actually got groups without any reference. So I know that you've had a look at that, and you have to make this fit with conceptual framework and every other standard. But maybe you'd just like to clarify, because I'm just wondering, is there a hierarchy there? We start with elements, and then do we have line items, and then do we have items? Or am I not, there isn't a hierarchy? I wonder if you could clarify.
Yeah, I think you picked up on there's probably an implied hierarchy, if you will, in here, but we're hesitant to define it so strictly in those terms for a couple of reasons. One, as you sort of alluded to, we've used this terminology throughout IS1 as it is now, and potentially through the rest of standards, and we didn't want to sort of get into trouble with defining something that maybe use it in a slightly different way somewhere else. But there's also a bit of nuance, I think, when we come to items in the notes, in that depending, because you can group on characteristics, depending on how you look at which characteristics provides the best information for your users, it becomes a little bit difficult to say that is the line item when potentially a different grouping of characteristics may come up with a different answer. So we didn't want to be quite so rigid in defining it in quite those terms. But I think you're right, there's a bit of an implied structure in that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
I generally agree with your recommendations and in question one. I just had one suggestion, I think.
Sure.
So if I look at the sort of guidance that we're planning to use based on paragraphs 11 to 20, I think if I was picking up this up cold, I would feel that I had a bit more guidance, if you like, in terms of what judgments I was being asked to make in the context of the notes, because I know I need to think about materiality. Whereas with the primary financial statements, we're really saying that you need to have at least one shared characteristic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think somebody might be able to argue the shared characteristic is that everything's an asset, therefore I just have one asset line, and I don't think that's necessarily what we mean. I know that maybe materiality, we can't necessarily use it in the same way for the face, but I wonder whether we could emphasise more that when they're thinking about what the sort of appropriate level of aggregation is and the sort of characteristics to think about, maybe we could talk about what is useful for users of financial statements given the purpose of the primary financial statement. So just to remind people, they should be thinking about what's actually useful as opposed to just saying, I found my characteristic. And that might just help. I think that's what we mean.
Yeah, and I think actually that is...
Help to bring it out a bit more.
Point taken. In that paragraph 11, we are trying to introduce it by sort of saying at the financial statement, at the elements of financial statements level, that provides some information, but not enough for what users are interested in. So the second half of that paragraph talks about how you might go about what the type of information that users are looking for and why we would want to go further than just assets. And the whole process is sort of envisaged as from those elements down. So you would sort of get a disaggregation down from that full assets level, if you will. But I think point taken, we can sort of build in to be a clearer about that thinking in here.
Thank you.
Tuck.
Thank you. I think I can agree with the staff recommendation, but please help me understand your recommendation a little more. I think the example shown in paragraph 18 is a good example. For example, company has a equity investment 100 and a debt investment 100. So they decided to show it on the face that equity investment 100 and debt investment 100. But in order to disaggregate more, they want to show it in the notes, the disaggregation based on the measurement. So they decided to show the financial instrument, which is measured by fair value through profit and loss, is 150. And then fair value through OCI is 50. So in that case, it's a disaggregation. However, investor may want to know how much of the equity investment is measured by the fair value through profit and loss, and how much of that instrument is measured fair value through profit and loss. So so in this sense, they show the different classification in the notes, but it is not reconcilable with the line items on the face. So do you require entity to make a further disaggregation, not just a measurement, financial instrument measured by fair value through profit and loss, 150, but you should disaggregate the equity investment, which is measured fair value through profit and loss, is, say, for example, 75, and the debt instrument, which is measured fair value through profit and loss, is 75. Do you require to disaggregate in such a way?
So I think the way that this has been laid out is not quite so strict in those terms. And I think this kind of talks to one of the challenges in terms of defining those elements in that way, is that it may, as you, is in your example, not be quite so strict a linear disaggregation from one to the other as you make cross statements. And so the idea is that the grouping, and that's the point to the sort of the link to the materiality is to intended to, it's not meant to be a requirement that you must do A, B, and C, but rather you must come up with the aggregation that is material to your users. So in your example, if you thought that information was material, yes, you would make the type of presentation in the notes that best serves those needs. And so we're not trying to be quite so strict as the split it here, split it here, split it here, but come up with the groupings that you see are material in your case.
Yeah. Maybe just to add to that and just to remind us all that this guidance, you know, principles are not there in isolation. They are complemented by specific requirements and individual standards. And, you know, targeting scenario you just explained, I think would have to be reconcilable because of just how requirements for disclosures in IFRS 7 and IFRS 13
work.
Yeah,
of course.
So that information will be provided. But it's an interesting point you raised that, you know, just, and maybe this is something we can consider in drafting to say that, you know, it's assumed that notes, you know, should be able to be reconciled to information that is provided on the
Maybe the most important point is the interpretation of your paragraph 14C. Your paragraph 14C says separating the line item presented in the primary statement based on the further characteristic. So does it mean if you want to make a note for further information, do you have to start from the line item shown on the face of the financial statement? Or you can have a slightly different starting point in order to present better information with different characteristic. So my example is this entity was not starting from equity investment, but starting from financial instruments, then disaggregated into just a financial instrument fair value through PL or fair value through OCI. So I think this information is really good. But if you say you have to disaggregate equity investment, you have to disaggregate equity investment further in detail. So I was wondering, your paragraph 14C is requiring in such a way, or not that much. That is what I didn't understand.
The further is referring to the initial characteristics that were used in A. So the thinking is, if you've started from the financial statements and have what is a summary, theoretically there are some characteristics that will be dissimilar in the items you've brought together there. And so C is asking you to think about, are there further characteristics that may provide material information that you may look to split apart further.
So you're saying we have to start from the line item of financial statement.
I think just to clarify here, what we're talking about here is the process of disaggregation of information. But what we're not addressing in here is providing supplementary information. So I think what you're talking about, if I've understood correctly, is actually providing supplementary information that is material. It's not necessarily a disaggregation, and in an ideal world, but in an ideal world, you'd want to see it somehow reconciled to what's in the primaries. But certainly there's nothing to stop you providing supplementary information, and if that information is material, it would be required to be provided.
Okay.
Does that answer?
Yeah.
Mary?
Comment sparked by comment both Sue and Tuck made. And one is, if I'm looking at the wording of question one and question A, small two, you know, Sue had said it isn't enough that they're all assets. So I think whatever we write, we probably want to make clear that it's separating each of those groups further rather than separating assets from liabilities. You know, and that's drafting, but it's making a point. But the other thing, I think that I would like to say is you've set the hurdle, Nick, of the items you group together that you aggregate must have at least one shared characteristic. But isn't, and this is, Tuck made me look at something I'd highlighted in paragraph 18 when it's looking at that equity example. I think I would express it as the things you group together have at least one shared characteristic, but you then also have to consider whether further disaggregation is necessary because of the dissimilar characteristics that they have. If those are so, you know, and I don't know what word we would use, but it's a modifier of some kind. You know, if the nature of the dissimilar characteristics means that further disaggregation would be useful to users of financial statements. So it's not just that they have to share, but then you also have to consider what the dissimilar characteristics are to assess whether further disaggregation is necessary, because it's not all clear as soon as you can identify one thing.
Yes, so I think the one thing was meant to be sort of a backstop, if you will, because of the summarization level in the primary financial statements. And then I think exactly as you say, we can...
I think to spell that out a bit more.
But that is the point, to get the dissimilar part.
Yeah.
Martin.
And also on this issue, man, if I read paragraph 18, I was not clear how far this goes, because, man, if you have equity securities, and let's assume you have to... The similar characteristics in equity securities, but then you have, for example, you have equity securities in emerging markets, in not emerging markets. You have it in maybe in which kind of industry you have it. And you can come up with, I think, maybe 10, 11 dissimilarities. And we say as long as we think, okay, some investors feel that is material, then you have to disaggregate. Maybe that is right, maybe not. But how does it fit then with IFRS 7? Because my understanding is if I have on my face, I have maybe financial assets which are fair value through P&L, and then, okay, I go into IFRS 7, and I'm saying maybe I have to split with equity and debt, and then I follow all the disclosure requirements, I'm fine. But if we're doing that, I have to consider, okay, do I have to split it now by industry, by market, by listed, non-listed, I don't know. And for me it is a principle which goes a little bit too far, because we have specific requirements about financial instruments disclosure and what is necessary. And if I have that, I don't know how I should deal with that in relation to IFRS 7.
There is a general requirement in IS 1 to provide any additional information that is useful to users of financial statements. So I think there is a requirement relevant. So thank you, Mary.
But you make this example, but it would then, I think, would say, okay, it is relevant. Because if there is some dissimilar characteristics, it could be relevant to an investor. And I think it would be for equity, because maybe it's relevant information if it is in which market or whatever.
How
does that fit with IFRS 7 now? Because in that we say, okay, that is a disclosure which we need for financial instruments.
But if you go, just thinking about the general IS 1 requirement to provide additional information if relevant, but we need to think about that in the context of the guidance that we've got on materiality that says that, you know, what you're looking to do is satisfy the information needs, the common information needs of the user of the financial statement. So you're not looking to satisfy every single information need, you're only looking to satisfy
Rachel, the mainstream needs. But my point is, if he makes his requirements, it is easy to make. But in practice, how to deal with that then is really difficult here. That was my point.
But it's exactly
because I don't know where to start, where to stop with that then.
But this is the outcome I thought we wanted on this project, because, you know, part of the need for disaggregation was that we hear feedback often, actually, in the case of financial instruments. We have heard it in the case of IFRS 13 PIR, that disaggregation often doesn't go far enough in terms of providing material information. So the idea behind this is that to make entities think further, not just say, okay, this is the list in IFRS 7, I'm done, but to actually think, is there something more here that would provide material information which would require me to disaggregate information further? I mean, that's exactly, I thought, what we wanted to affect with this without going into prescriptive detail, because for some companies there may be, for others there may not be, depending on the type.
Banks and, this 400 pages would become to 800 pages for a bank if there is further disaggregation.
I guess
that will happen.
I guess to Rachel's point, you have to go as far as you're providing material information. And, you know, if it is material, the number of pages doesn't matter. If it is not material, even if there are different characteristics, then they don't matter. So it's yeah.
That's my point. It's all easy to say what is material, but in practice to say what is material in kind of especially this example, you can come up with 10 dissimilarities. And if you ask 10 people, some will say, okay, it is material, others would say not. And if you are a bank which has to be regulated, then you have to do all that. And my point is that helpful? And how does it relate to seven? Because I think it goes too far. And if you mind, we have a building, you can also say, is this building maybe then in which country? Is it a five-floor building? Is it, mind, you can...
That's exactly what they do today, you know, and then they disaggregate. They say, okay, if they're similar buildings, they are in one. If they're different buildings, they would say, okay, these are our
office premises. And we want to have that, okay.
And this is what users tell us is useful, because there are different risks.
Okay.
I mean, yeah.
Thank you. Generally, I
100 pages.
Generally, I agree with the step recommendation. But one thing to clarify is the item A. From paragraph 9A, we use the items, classify information into groups or classes, items, so on. But in the case of a new proposal in 14A, rather than using items, we are using assets and liabilities, equity, income, and expenses. Generally, it's okay. However, if this is a kind of description of aggregation or disaggregation, you are assuming there are some exceptions, right, on this principle. So what I'm saying, sometimes we might need aggregate maybe assets and liabilities. That happens. How about the insurance contract? Is it that contract combines this kind of concepts of assets and liabilities together? They are similar items, but everything is similar. However, if we just think that they're kind of a component of an insurance contract, then some items are maybe classified as assets, some are liabilities, but we combine everything. We are presenting that amount of this whole contract as an asset and liability. So what I'm saying is if we change from paragraph 9A to 14A, then 9A is used general terms, similar items, segregate, dissimilar, disaggregate. But in the case of 14A, we are using assets, liabilities, expenses. These are the first starting point. We have to disaggregate everything here. You cannot.
I think, and sorry if you don't mind me, and I'm not sure I'm fully understanding. I think we're actually very clear when we talk about insurance is that we have allowed the combination of assets and liabilities as a single item, but that is actually an exception from our general principle.
Yes.
I think this is a statement of the general principle.
Yep.
And then that's why I think it was a big decision we took when we allowed those two items to be combined.
Yes.
Required.
Required those two items to be combined.
Correct. So that's why I'm saying if we do want to avoid some kind of exceptions, maybe then we're better to keeping the expression of paragraph 9A rather than...
We thought it would be helpful to refer to elements the way they are referred to in the conceptual framework, which is why, we made this...
Some kind of danger.
In the basis, maybe worth recognizing what you say, where the board explicitly permits or requires offsetting, then... that carries...
I mean, what we have here is consistent with the conceptual framework, which basically says that, offsetting generally will not provide useful information because it's combining things with different characteristics. But and so I think what we have here works for the vast majority of the cases that we're looking at in terms of providing this guidance.
This is kind of general principle, you are expecting some exceptions, it's okay. But you are saying that there are... We use a description of aggregation, disaggregation as paragraph 14 here. It's not principle, just a description of what aggregation or disaggregation means. So that's the one thing, all those concepts are a little vaguely linked. So maybe I just I'm suggesting that maybe general terms are more safer than using more specific descriptive things that I'm suggesting. Think about that kind of danger. yeah, that's it. Yes.
Anne?
Couple of questions. Paragraph 13, we talk about the board having tentatively decided about the role of primary financial statements and role of notes. I think that's coming from the principles of disclosure discussion paper where we use that language. But I didn't know that we'd actually made a tentative decision around that.
Mm-hmm. We had in the May 2018 board meeting, that was the decision to do...
Is that right? Okay, I couldn't find it. Okay. All right, the other question is starts in paragraph 11, and it's where we talk to financial statements being about processing large numbers of transactions or other events, and that language I think derives from IAS 1, where we talk about fair presentation of effects of transactions and other events. But then when we bring it down to what the words are actually in question 1, we talk about... classifying individual transactions and other events into the four elements that Chung Wu's just been talking about. I'm just not sure if we've still got other events at that point, because I know why it's like that in IAS 1 and some of our other statements where we go transactions and other events, da-da-da-da-da. But when we get down to something like classification, how do we classify an other event that hasn't been recorded as a transaction? How does another other event get into assets or liabilities, blah, blah, blah?
Is impairment transaction?
Well, it impairment leads to... Impairment's an event, and it leads to a transaction, and the transaction gets into assets, liabilities.
Transaction is a debit and credit as opposed to
exchange with a counterparty.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think that when we actually get down to this, talking about disaggregation and aggregation... if we're actually at transaction level rather than a more higher level, which is an event.
I think we saw transaction a little bit differently than you formulated it right now, but I'm happy to take that maybe offline. And
take it offline. It just struck me as we were getting into what was quite detailed about moving transactions into groups and items and line items. I'm thinking, well, where do events go? But we'll take it offline.
Fine. Gary.
Thank you. At the start of the discussion, Nick actually supported the staff's recommendation. Mm. Then, having listened to all this, I still do. But there were some. But there were some good points made here. I think we should probably amplify whether it was the basis, the application guidance, or something. Although paragraph 18 uses financial assets and investment securities as an example. Well, I'm not a FI type guy, more of an operational guy. I think somebody, maybe more than one person, made the point, if the weight of the dissimilarity trait overwhelms the one common trait, I think we probably got to discuss that a little bit someplace in the document, that if, yes, they're all assets, you know, that is a common trait. You could say they're all receivables, if that was just the word, receivables, common net. But if you peel back receivables, there's trade receivables. There could be a refund from the government for overpayment of taxes, insurance recoveries due from refunds and rebates from suppliers. And so they're all receivables. They're all entirely different. And other than the receivable, they come from very different business processes or events. And so that might argue maybe the line should be labeled trade receivables, and these all are down to other. Mm-hmm. So there's all sorts of ways you can, you know, approach this thing. If you're an IT company, capitalized software, you know, to sell your product, it's a big number, but you've probably got capitalized internal use software that's more akin to property, plant, and equipment to run your internal operation. So I think we need probably a little bit of development about when might you disaggregate. And I don't think it has to be in the standard. I think it's in the basis or the implementation guidance of the companies or something. I still think we got the exact right point here that we're trying to do. It just needs a little bit further development.
Mary.
Yeah. Today seems to be my day for echoing Gary, because as I've thought about the discussion, I think it's not a matter of me developing objections to anything that's proposed in question one, but thinking about whether it has to be amplified a bit more to pick up some of the points that have been raised, because I don't think any of this has suggested that these are the wrong criteria. I think it's just a question whether there's enough here for that to be the end of the discussion. And one thing I had thought about as I look back on these paragraphs again, 11, 12, 13, 14 in particular, is whether we're addressing aggregation, disaggregation only in the context of the preparation of the primary financial statements, or whether it's also for disaggregation in the notes. Now, there's a very important statement that I think we have to draw out that is at the end of paragraph 13, a higher level of aggregation appropriate in the primary financial statements than in the notes. But I think we should be writing the criteria so that they apply to the financial statements as a whole, and then that sentence about higher level of aggregation in the primary financial statements then has a bit more of a context. But the fact that with paragraph 13 and 14 are really driving the wording of what's in question one in terms of talking about line items, and that kind of that's what it, at least to me, raised the question about, are we clear that these aggregation, disaggregation apply also to figuring out how much detail, how much disaggregation you need in the notes? And that's where maybe we can try and bring in some comments to address Martin's concern, because you know, we can point out that sometimes disclosure requirements will specify an expected kind of level of detail that helps people to understand how much disaggregation should satisfy the primary, you know, the primary users, and that's the IFRS 7 sets out. But I think we just have to be clear about whether we're doing something that addresses all of the financial statements. Then we have extra comments for the greater level of aggregation for primary financial statements, or whether this is an exercise only for the primary financial statements.
Clarify on that? The intention was that the principles of disaggregation would apply to the notes as well as to the primaries, and then you've got the additional sort of paragraph that you pointed out, that you would expect to see a higher level of aggregation within the notes than you would see So you would expect to see a higher level of aggregation in the primaries versus the notes.
Also.
Thank you. Well, I have a question that could be regarded as a joke, but which is a serious question. And first of all, I agree with the staff recommendation. I don't have any comment to make on this in particular. But my question is whether you would regard the accounting policy choice that we voted on this morning as being subject to this guidance or being an exception to this guidance.
That presentation.
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well, this morning we approved an accounting policy choice of grouping financial expenses in operating for certain categories of entities or separating between financing and operating. My question is, when an entity will make that accounting policy choice, will that entity be subject in making the choice to this guidance, or do you regard the accounting policy choice in itself as being an exception to the guidance?
This is about the presentation of information. So the decisions we were making this morning was about the presentation within the primary financial statements. And in a way, the requirements for the presentation of the primary financial statements overlays all the sort of general requirements that we're talking about here on aggregation and disaggregation. And what we're doing is we're saying that you should present these particular types of income and expenses in these particular locations. So I see it as being a separate decision from this discussion of aggregation and disaggregation. Now, if you ended up with a line item that you'd have a line item up in operating and you wanted to disaggregate that further within the operating section, that's absolutely fine. But we're saying it should be in the operating section following the decisions that we made this morning.
I mean, I see where you're coming from, Françoise. I hesitate to say that entities would necessarily have to consider this explicitly in making accounting policy choice, because accounting policy choice is accounting policy choice. But what I hear you saying is that in making that accounting policy choice, you're basically deciding whether, say, operating is the common characteristics of the items that I'm therefore putting there. But bear in mind, this accounting policy choice is really not based on what's the right classification. It was more based on cost of benefits. So I'm not sure to what extent it's applicable in this case, but if it helps, I understand the thinking at least.
I think if you were subjecting this accounting policy choice to this guidance, basically everything which is clearly identifiable as one or the other would have to be separated. So it would, in fact, submitting this to the guidance would create a form of restriction. Yeah. Whereas if you state it as a few exceptions, you really let people disregard. And it is then clearly not only an exception, but a contradiction to this guidance. But I didn't intend it as a joke.
So I'm supportive, but I just have a question about maybe a little bit in sympathy with what Francois said, but still far away. So where a standard tells you how to group something, you do it the way the standard says, right? So this is being applied where there's some opportunity for judgment. And I think it's good. We talk about, though, groups based on their characteristics share at least one characteristic. In cases, is it possible to provide any guidance where, say, there are two competing characteristics and how an entity should choose? So again, the standard is not directed you to one or the other. Characteristic A, characteristic B. We're thinking about, you know, more detail in the operating section. And there's nothing there. And I'm assuming we're just leaving that to judgment to choose which is the most vital characteristic. But is it possible that there might be some guidance?
I don't think we saw ever being competing characteristics, did we, Nick? Because it's not like a linear kind of drilling down, and it goes back to Tak's example from the beginning. So say you have equity and death, and then you have two measurement bases. And, you know, if you go straight down, you would argue that they compete with each other. But the idea is to provide different cuts. So if you judge both characteristics to result in material information, then I think this guidance would lead you to disaggregate using both.
Can I?
Is that...
I was going to say something which I think looks on, so if I can then... So I think these are some good questions, and Martin's comment made me look at IFRS 7 because I was thinking of them as being complementary. So even if you go to IFRS 7, so let's use that as an example. So it's quite specific in terms of the notes, not so much the face, but the notes, and it says, for example, that you have to separately provide information about things measured at fair value through P&L, things that are fair value OCI, things that are at amortized cost. But then the standard itself goes on to say, when you decide what sort of classes of instruments that you should provide information about, think about what's useful for users of financial statements. So what I was thinking that this was really doing was complementary, in the sense that if I was thinking about disclosures to do with financial instruments, 7's already told me I have to, at a minimum, have fair value through P&L separate from fair value OCI, separate from amortized cost. And then we've already got something to say, think about users of financial statements. But this, in addition, could be complementary, because it's saying, you know, to hum a few more bars, when you're thinking about that, the classes and the level to which you cut down within fair value through P&L, within fair value OCI, within amortized cost, apply these ideas that are in this paper to think about how you might go about doing that in terms of similar, dissimilar, et cetera, et cetera. So you still have to comply with IFRS 7, because it's got some minimum requirements. But then when you think about a bank, you don't want them to put everything they've got at fair value through P&L, which includes derivatives, equity investments, debt securities, and all different types of things within those, all in one bucket. We want them to do more, and this would be helpful in terms of hopefully providing some guidance on what you think about when you make that decision. That was how I was thinking about it. Is that fair?
I think that's exactly right.
Okay, can I see who supports the staff recommendation?
13.
Let's
So the second part of the question, the second question for the board is on page 11 and relates to the large residual or other balances. The paper identifies situations in which aggregating immaterial items may result in large residual or other balance and proposes some guidance on achieving more descriptive labeling or informative disclosures in these situations. The question for the board is, does the board agree with the staff's recommendation to provide this additional guidance for material balances comprised of immaterial items as described in paragraph 32 of this paper?
No comments? Do we agree?
14.
And the final section of the paper summarizes the tentative decisions that are expected to contribute to improved guidance on aggregation and disaggregation. The staff think that these principles, definitions, and the guidance described provide sufficient guidance in this area. And the question for the board, as on page 14, is does the board agree that the principles, definitions, and guidance on aggregation and disaggregation, as described in paragraphs 34 to 36, provide sufficient guidance on aggregation and disaggregation? And if not, what other further areas of the board would the board like the staff to explore?
Mary?
Quick thought is that I think the discussions we just had about question one are the kind of, not necessarily additional work, but additional amplification in terms of sufficiency. That's kind of my condition for saying, yes, it's not go off and look for even further requirements, but I think you need to try and capture a bit of the advice we got this you just got.
Do you agree?
13.
All right. Then we go for another break. Thank you. We go for another break because our insurance fans will be waiting eagerly till 2:45.
Quarter of three.
Quarter to three.
2:45.
2:45.